Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We're looking at a stack of sources today that, I mean, it feels like it's closing the book on a very specific kind of human frustration. In a scenario I think everyone does, you're driving out of the city, maybe into the mountains, and you just watch the dashboard.
Yep, you watch the bars just drop.
Four bars become three, then one, and then that dreaded no service, the map freezes, the music dies.
And you get that little lurch in your stomach. It's the modern version of being stranded, really. We rely on that connection for everything.
It really is. But according to the news dropping today, February 2nd, 2026, that whole experience, it's officially on its way out. We're looking at reports that basically say the phrase no service is becoming a historical artifact.
It's a bold claim, but the data really seems to bear it out. We are dissecting this announcement from SpaceX and T-Mobile about their direct-to-cell system.
Right.
And I want to be clear, this isn't some future roadmap. They have done it. They've connected a standard off-the-shelf smartphone to satellites that are orbiting at 27,000 kilometers per hour.
And that's the key thing, isn't it? We are not talking about those, you know, chunky satellite phones with the giant antenna you have to pull out.
No, not at all. And that's why this is such a paradigm shift. For decades, satellite comms needed special hardware. You needed a big antenna to shout loud enough to reach orbit.
Right.
What they've done is get the phone that's in your pocket right now, which was designed to talk to a tower maybe 2 miles away, to talk to a satellite 500 kilometers straight up.
It's turning a hardware problem into an infrastructure solution. So our mission today is to just tear this apart. We need to get into the engineering because, frankly, the physics seem impossible.
Yeah.
And we need to talk about this tower deception thing, which is how they trick the phone. And then the global rollout, because this changes everything for carriers, travelers, and, you know, anyone who lives outside a big city.
It's a classic story of software eating the world. Or in this case, I guess, eating the sky.
Okay, let's start with the proof. The hello world moment. Yeah. The sources describe a very specific event from just a few hours ago.
Right. So the official SpaceX account shared the first ever SMS sent through this live direct-to-cell system. But it's the context that's so cool.
Where was it sent from?
They sent it from the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Okay, so the ultimate dead zone. If you're out there, you're usually talking thousands of dollars of equipment to get any kind of signal out.
Precisely. And the phone they used wasn't some special prototype. It was a standard iPhone 14. No case, no dongle, just the phone itself.
An iPhone 14, that's a device that came out years ago. It's not even the latest chip.
And that's the whole point. It's what Elon Musk was getting at with his tweet. He just said, today, mobile dead zones on Earth are extinct.
Wow.
And by using an older phone, they're proving that this is backward compatible. You don't need to wait for the iPhone 18 to get it.
Okay, but let's manage expectations. The word extinct is strong. If I'm in the Pacific right now with my phone, I'm not, like, streaming 4K video, am I?
No, absolutely not. The sources are very clear on the rollout.
Yeah.
As of today, February 2026, only the text function's active. You can send an SMS. Voice calls and actual data like for browsing? That's slated for the end of the year. Yeah. It's a bandwidth thing they have to scale up.
So text is the beachhead. But I want to get into the weeds. How does this actually work? Because like you said, a phone is designed to talk to a stationary tower, not a flying object.
It's all about relative velocity and distance. I mean, think about a cell tower. It just sits there blasting a signal out. Your phone connects, they shake hands, and the tower doesn't move.
Right. But a Starlink satellite is moving at Mach 20.
It's moving at 27,000 kilometers per hour. And it's 500 kilometers up.
Oh.
So you've got two huge physics problems. First, the signal from your phone is incredibly faint by the time it reaches the satellite.
Okay.
And second, the satellite is moving so fast, you get a massive Doppler shift.
Doppler shift. That's the ambulance siren thing from high school, right?
Sure.
The pitch changes as it goes past. But for radio, that means the frequency is drifting.
Exactly. Radio waves are just light. If the satellite is rushing toward you, the waves get compressed, the frequency shifts up. As it moves away, it shifts down. A standard LTE chip in your phone is not programmed for that.
So the phone just sees garbage and drops the connection.
It sees garbage. It says, I don't understand this signal, and it drops it.
Yeah.
And normally you'd fix that by putting a smarter chip in the phone.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't do that. They had to support existing phones.
So they had to solve it on the satellite's end.
Yes.
And this is where that tower deception idea comes into play.
It is. This is really the core of the engineering masterpiece.
Yeah.
The satellite is running this incredibly powerful software that predicts everything. Your phone's position, its own trajectory, and it pre-distorts the signal it sends down.
It pre-distorts it.
Yeah, it mathematically cancels out the Doppler shift before it even happens. So from the phone's perspective, the signal it receives looks perfectly normal and stable.
That is wild. The satellite is doing all the work to make itself look normal to the dumb phone on the ground.
It's pretending to be stationary. But there's another layer, which is maybe even more impressive. It's what they call the timing advance problem.
Break that down for me.
Okay, so with LTE, because light takes time to travel, the tower tells your phone to send its signal a little bit early so it arrives in the right time slot. For a tower a few miles away, that adjustment is tiny.
But from 500 kilometers up?
The delay is huge in computing terms. The phone's standard protocol would just time out. It would think the tower is invalid because it's too far away.
So it would just fail instantly.
Instantly. So the satellite also has to spoof the timing. It has to lie to the phone about how far away it is, essentially hacking the LTE protocol from space to keep that connection alive.
That's a masterclass in backward compatibility. I mean, instead of making us all upgrade, they just upgraded the sky.
That takes serious hardware. The sources mention the Starlink V2 mini satellites use these advanced phased array antennas.
I've heard that term, phased array. It's not like a normal dish, right?
No, a dish has to physically point. A phased array is a flat panel with thousands of tiny antennas. And by controlling the timing, the phase of the signal from each one, they can steer a beam of energy electronically.
So they can aim a spotlight of radio waves without moving the satellite at all.
Exactly. It's called beam forming. They project a little cell onto the ground, and as the satellite flies, that cell moves across the ground. So the software is handing your phone off from one beam to another, and then from one satellite to the next, seamlessly.
And the whole time, my phone just thinks it's talking to a normal tower on a hill.
The whole time, the complexity is just staggering. It really explains why this took so long to solve.
And why most people said it was basically impossible.
It was easier to just try and sell you a $1,000 sat phone.
Which brings us back to the consumer.
Yeah.
Because they solved all this on the back end, the user experience is, well, it's nothing. You just use your phone.
That's the magic, right? The source is very explicit. You do not need a new phone.
And this is where the market disruption really kicks in. I mean, Apple has their emergency SOS via satellite, but that needs specific hardware in the newer iPhones.
Right. Apple's approach was a hardware solution. Buy the new iPhone, get this feature. What T-Mobile and SpaceX did was an infrastructure solution. Keep your old phone, we fix the sky.
So when they say all LTE phones, they actually mean that.
They do. The source lists the iPhone 15 and 16, even the older 14 from the test. It lists Samsung, Xiaomi, Pixel, even budget Android phones from 5 years ago.
That's huge for developing markets. You don't need a flagship phone to be safe.
Yeah, SpaceX put out this great little rule of thumb. They said, if your phone can connect to Bluetooth, it can't connect to satellites. But if it has LTE, welcome aboard.
I love that. It just cuts through all the tech jargon. If you've got a SIM card, you're good to go.
It completely democratizes safety. You could be a fisherman with a 5-year-old Samsung, and you'd have the same emergency link as a billionaire in Silicon Valley.
Okay, let's talk performance. Text is live. Voice and data are coming. But what kind of speeds are we actually talking about? Because satellite internet has a reputation for being slow.
It does, yeah, mostly from the old geostationary satellites. But the test data here is really promising. The source says download speeds hit 17 megabits per second.
17 NEPs. Okay, for my fiber at home, that's not great. But for a direct-to-phone connection from space,
it is phenomenal. To put that into context, you only need about 5 NEPs to stream HD video from Netflix. So 17 is more than enough to stream 1080p, browse the web, send photos.
But that's shared bandwidth, right? If there are 100 people in one spot trying to connect.
That is the catch. This is a cell projected from space.
Yeah.
If you get 500 people in that cell trying to stream YouTube, yeah, that 17 NEPs is going to get sliced pretty thin. This isn't meant to replace urban 5G. It's for the places where there are zero towers.
And latency. You mentioned the old satellites were way out there. That created a big delay.
Right. Geostationary latency can be 600 milliseconds or more. It's that awful delay on a call where you keep talking over each other.
Yeah.
But Starlink is low Earth orbit, EO. It's only 500 kilometers up. The source puts the latency around 60 milliseconds.
It's like good 4G.
It is. It's totally undetectable for a voice call. Now, if you're a competitive gamer trying to play a shooter in the desert, you're still going to be frustrated. 60 milliseconds is too slow for that.
But for a video call with your family from a campsite,
crystal clear.
So we've got the tech, we've got the phone, now comes the bureaucracy. The source talks about frequency approval. This feels like the biggest roadblock.
It absolutely is. Physics is universal, but regulation is national. Those satellites are flying over China, Russia, Brazil, everywhere, every 90 minutes. They can't just beam down T-Mobile's frequencies into those countries without permission.
So they have to literally turn the beam off when they cross a border.
Unless they have a partner carrier in that country. And that's why the carrier list is so important. Right now, the source says it's T-Mobile in the US, Rogers in Canada, and Optus in Australia.
That's already a huge amount of landmass.
It is. But the long-term play is what they call reciprocal roaming.
How does that work?
So think about roaming now. You fly to France, your phone connects to a local tower there, and your carrier pays a fee. Starlink wants to be the Roam 2 network for all the gaps in between.
So if I'm a Rogers customer from Canada and I drive down into, say, Death Valley in the US,
You'd roam onto T-Mobile's ground network in the cities, but once you hit that dead zone, your phone would just automatically roam onto the Starlink Sky network. It turns the whole planet into one big coverage map.
That sounds like the end of those $10 a day travel passes, or at least the anxiety of, will my phone even work there?
It moves everything toward a utility model. Connectivity just becomes like the GPS signal. It's
Right.
just there. You don't think about which GPS satellite you're using.
So that brings us to the big picture. We've gone through the how, but let's talk about the so what. The source really highlights safety as the main driver here.
It's the killer app. The humanitarian impact is immediate. The source explicitly mentions no more getting lost in mountains without a signal and no ships cut off at sea.
We see those stories every single winter. A skier goes out of bounds, a car breaks down on a rural road, their phone has a full battery, but they can't call for help because there are no bars.
That entire scenario just vanishes. If you can see the sky, you have a lifeline. The sky itself becomes the world's largest safety net.
It's a really powerful idea, the Sky Network. But let's push on that. What does it mean for society? We've talked about freedom of communication before.
Well, this is a huge leap. When you remove geography as a barrier to communication, you change the power dynamic. Rural communities that have always been underserved because it wasn't profitable to run fiber out to them, they suddenly have the same baseline connectivity as someone in a major city. It really levels the playing field.
It does, but it also raises that question of disconnection, doesn't it? If there are no dead zones, there's no place to truly get away from it all.
That's the double-edged sword, for sure. I think a lot of people go to the mountains specifically to lose their signal, but I would argue it's better to have the choice. It's better to have the signal and turn your phone off than to need the signal and not have it at all.
That is a very fair point. Choice is always better than constraint.
And think about the business side. This puts huge pressure on other carriers. If T-Mobile can market 100% U.S. coverage, because they have this, how does Verizon or AT&T compete if they don't have a satellite partner?
They can't. They'll have to sign on. It forces the whole industry to look up.
Exactly. We're watching the merger of terrestrial telecom and aerospace. These were totally separate industries. Now they're the same thing.
Okay, before we wrap up, let's summarize the key takeaways because we covered a lot of technical ground.
Sure. Three big things. First, the no service area is ending. Dead zones are effectively going extinct. Second, that tower deception engineering means you don't need a new phone. Your existing LTE phone will work. And third, it's starting with T-Mobile, Rogers, and Optus. But the entire system is built for global roaming.
And for now, we're at the tech stage with the voice and data coming by the end of this year.
Right. It's a fast deployment.
I want to leave our listeners with one final thought to chew on. We talked about this becoming a utility like air or GPS, but satellites are expensive. Rockets are expensive.
Billions and billions of dollars.
So the question is, how do we pay for this? The source doesn't detail the pricing model yet. So would you be willing to pay, say, an extra 10 or 20 bucks a month on your bill for satellite assurance? Or do you think that in 2026, the ability to call for help from anywhere on the planet is a basic safety right that should just be included?
It's that classic debate, isn't it? Is safety a premium feature or is it a standard utility?
I have a feeling the market and maybe some regulators are going to have a lot to say about that pretty soon.
I suspect you're right.
Thanks for diving deep with us today. It's a fascinating time to be looking up.
Stay connected, everyone.
Catch you on the next one.